Welcome to the Josh Meister's Lost podcast, the audio version of the Josh Meister's Lost blog, which you can find at thelostmeister.blogspot.com.
Hey everybody, this is the Josh Meister and welcome to the Josh Meister's Lost podcast. We just got finished watching season 6, episode, 3 is what they're calling it, What Kate Does, and got a couple people called in tonight. Congested, a.k.a. Real in Real Life Alex, is called in. And we also have Dan Ramos from the Black Rock podcast. So,
howdy.
Thanks for stopping by. And and Congested, you want to say hi just to people who haven't listened to the show before get to recognize your name?
Yes, this is Alex, a.k.a.
Recognize
Congested.
Your voice is what I'm Yeah, sorry.
This is my voice.
Thank you.
I am Alex.
Okay. All right, thanks. So let's, before we dig into this episode, there's a few things that I had a chance to listen to the Lost Casts podcast today. One of the shows that I enjoy listening to because they tend to notice a lot of things that I didn't notice, a lot like the Black Rock, actually. These are some notes kind of mostly related to the season premiere. And some of these things are things they directly talked about in the podcast, and some are just things that I sort of got to pondering the questions that they were asking or the things that they pointed out, and I wrote some things kind of related to that. Here are a bunch of things related to questions and kind of ideas related to the Flash Sideways that were in the season premiere. Flash Sideways, for anyone who doesn't know, is what the executive producers want us to call the alternate timelines. So here's some questions and thoughts. Again, most of them are from Lost Cast. Some of them are just kind of things that I came up with after listening to Lost Cast. Okay, they pointed out that Sawyer seems too happy for having just killed Frank Duckett prior to boarding this flight, which I guess I'm presuming that it's still called Flight 815, although, as we'll talk about when we get to the Easter eggs, Jack from Jay and Jack is in the chat room, and he sent in an interesting Easter egg, so I don't know if it's actually still Flight 815, but in any case, the flight that they were on, Sawyer seems far too happy to have just, been conned into murdering somebody. So I wonder if he didn't kill Frank Duckett in this timeline. That's what they were kind of speculating about on their show. He didn't seem to be the least bit distraught or depressed if he had just murdered the wrong man in Australia. They pointed out, and there's also a link, a screen cap of this up on... Let me see. I can't remember if it was Dark UFO or if it was Sledge website, but there's a screen cap out there of Desmond with a wedding ring on his finger when he's on the airplane. So, of course, that leads us to wonder who he married. Was Penny Widmore ever even born in this timeline? Because we don't know if Charles Widmore got off the island. And that sort of got me thinking, this may have been something we talked about a while ago on the podcast, but I don't remember specifically talking about it for sure if we did or not. But we found out in a season 4 episode that Eloise Hawking and Charles Widmore are Penelope Widmore's parents. If I'm remembering correctly, I think Eloise and Charles had some sort of a conversation that sort of indicated that. Or maybe they were talking about Dan. I don't know. Anyway, we find out in the season 5 episode, I'm going to have to go back and try to find those episodes and watch them again to see what they said specifically. Or maybe somebody could look it up on Lostpedia while I'm pretending to know what I'm talking about here, to look up Penny and Dan Faraday to find out if it says anything about them being related. But we find out in season 5 that Eloise Hawking was pregnant with Daniel Faraday in 1977, and that she was in a relationship with Charles Widmore at the time, which would imply that Charles is a father. So that would make Dan and Penny brother and sister, right?
Yeah, they're half brother and half sister.
Oh, half brother and half sister. So did Charles have Penny with
We don't know who Penny's mother is, but both you know, Hawking and Whitmore, you know, Dan's parents, Daniel's parents.
Well, they alluded in the past that he's had relationships off island.
Oh right, yeah, that's right. Yeah. The reason I was confused, I think, when I was trying to remember what they said in season 4, was when Eloise Hawking looked at Penny in the airport or something like that. Was that season 4 or was something?
No, that was the variable where they're in the hospital and where Hawking meets Penny.
I think that's what it was. Yeah, it was in the hospital. Right, exactly. That's the scene that I'm referring to. And I think that Eloise said something to her about her eyes or something. They reminded her of Penny's father. And Penny's like, who are you? And so we, you know, it,
no, she says of his father, and then she's like, oh, how do you know Desmond, or how do you know his father?
Oh, okay. Okay, well, it wasn't as big of a deal as I thought it was then. I didn't have time to go back and try to find that transcript and all that, but in any case, so they're at least half-brother and sister, which is kind of interesting. So we don't really know whether Eloise Hawking got off the island. We do know that Miles probably got off the island because he, of course, being Pierre Chang's son, he presumably got off safely because Dr. Chang ordered the evacuation of the Dharma women and children from the island. So presumably Miles and his mom are safe. And in fact, well, we know that happened in the original timeline anyway. And I guess the original timeline and the new Flash Sideways timeline both line up as far as that goes. From what I, you know, can guess, that presumably Miles and his mom got off the island either way, you know, in either timeline. So Miles should be alive, but Dan Faraday, he's only going to exist if Eloise Hawking got off the island safely, and we don't know really whether any of the others got off the island. So Charles Widmore and Eloise Hawking may have died in the Flash Sideways timeline. So let's see, some other things they kind of jokingly said: will the Red Sox lose the series in this timeline? you know, potentially either it could be for comic effect or just to show how differently things really have turned out as a result of the events that they changed in 1977. The Lost Writers' answer to the grandfather paradox. They kind of brought up the grandfather paradox and what that is. I think we've talked about it before when discussing time travel on the show, but basically grandfather paradox is that you can't go back in time and kill your own grandfather before your father was born, because then you never would have existed in order to be able to travel back in time and kill your grandfather.
Except in Futurama.
Well, but there's different theories about this, though, and the Lost Writers have kind of chosen to answer this, you know, by making it so that there was an alternate timeline. Basically, what happened was they didn't erase the timeline that they came from, but they sort of created a parallel timeline, almost like an alternate dimension. You could kind of think of it that way, where both events always existed. They both exist, and but just obviously not in the same sort of universe, I guess you could say. It's creating a parallel timeline or an alternate timeline, which is, you know, of course, if you listen to the official Lost podcast, you know that that's a phrase that Damon and Carlton hate. They don't want us to use that because it's just as valid as the original timeline. But alternate timeline is, I think, a more accurate description, a more clear description.
Yeah. And just jumping in here, like, you know, I listened to that podcast too, the official podcast, and when they said that, I mean, you know, yeah, I guess, you know, that's how they want us to think of it, except for the fact that we spent 5 years in one timeline, so for us to not consider it alternate is kind of a joke.
Yeah. Well, exactly. I'm with you there. Okay, so will the old Dharma people recognize them? Okay, so they came up with this idea. Of course, if the women and children got off the island safely, then that could mean that there are Dharma folks that are still alive that have come back to, you know, come back from the island, who could potentially even recognize, you know, the time-traveling versions of Jack and Kate and so forth. So that would be really interesting. I don't know if they're going to get into that on the show, but it's fun to kind of think about that as being a possibility, that some of the Dharma people could see them and recognize them as being the time travelers that they saw 30 years earlier. So it's kind of an interesting idea anyway. Let's see, a couple other things related to things they were discussing. Christian Shepherd told John that he had to die. And so they were suggesting, does that mean that Christian is or maybe works for the Man in Black? Before we started recording, Alex and I were talking about a lot of different kind of possibilities about how Christian Shepherd could be tied in, you know, whether he really does work, you know, speak for Jacob as he claimed to walk, or whether he works for the Smoke Monster or the Man in Black. And I think we'll probably get back to that a little bit later. In fact, I'm going to make a note in my show notes here to make sure that we get back into that. In any case, they were speculating that maybe because Christian is the one who told John that he had to die, that's why he thought that. Although on the other hand too, Richard Alpert also said that to him, but we now
know. No, but it was Locke who told Richard to say that to him.
Exactly.
Yeah, or not Locke, it was the Smoke Monster who told
the fake Locke.
Richard.
Right, the Smoke Monster. Right. Does anybody remember that? I didn't have a chance to confirm that Christian actually told John that he had to die too. Was that in the?
No, but he makes a comment about, you know, that's why they call it a sacrifice. He says, you know, Locke. This is right as he's turning the wheel.
Okay.
Right. Locke
so
is the
anyway,
one who brought it up.
Okay. Okay. Interesting. Well, so we'll get back to Christian after watching this episode, that we possibly get some more insight into Christian's character through some revelations about Claire in the episode. Let's see. Okay, so another thing, just kind of getting back to Jacob dying without any struggle. There's another interesting thing that happened there. Of course, we know that Jacob touched Locke, you know, after he fell out of the eighth-story window, presumably saving his life. And so Jacob, we also know that he can apparently see into the future, that Jacob can, because he gave Hurley the Ankh in the guitar case, which contained the names of the people who he would later send to the temple after he died. And Jacob even gave the detail that Saeed needed to live. Now, is that an interesting point to reconsider that after watching this episode, too, about what that might mean. So, let's see. I'm going to have to stick that in my notes to talk about later, too. Because that changes everything. Kind of what happened, what we learned in this episode about Saeed, makes a big difference about whether or not Saeed should live based on Jacob's instructions. In any case, so Jacob saved Locke's life, even though he apparently can see into the future. He knew that, you know, he can see into the future enough to know that he should give Hurley an Ankh that would contain their names and the fact that Saeed didn't, you know, shouldn't die. Presumably, Jacob could also have seen the future to know that Locke was going to be the one whose body would be possessed, or, well, not really possessed, but whose body would be sort of imitated by the Man in Black and ultimately would lead to his death. Same thing with Ben. I mean, Ben made a comment in the premiere episode, like, he didn't even struggle. Like, what, you know, why wouldn't he have put up a fight? And you know, we talked a little bit about this last week, kind of the Obi-Wan Kenobi, you know, thing. But I think just also when we go back and consider that, even though, you know, I hadn't really thought about that part about Jacob being able to see the future. That hadn't occurred to me when we were talking about last week. So I wanted to bring that up again, that if Jacob can see into the future, and yet he's still healed Locke, there must be some purpose, you know. And he obviously knew that Ben was going to kill him, even if he couldn't see the future. I mean, it was pretty darn obvious that Ben's standing there with a knife ready to kill him. So, I mean, Jacob must have some purpose or some reason for doing what he did, if you see what I'm saying, like for allowing all those things to happen so that he would die.
Yeah, and Josh, if I could just jump in here a second, like, and you can cut this out if you want later, but I read actually a really cool theory this week. I don't know if you know how, like, Dark UFO, a bunch of people post theories, and a lot of them are crap, but this one was actually really cool, and this guy's like, yeah, I've only seen 20 episodes of Lost, but it's apparent immediately what it is. And he thinks it's an amalgam of, these two comic series from 1984. One of them is The Secret Wars, and the other one is the DC comic series Crisis on Infinite Earths. And I hadn't read either of them, but after, basically, in the DC one, there's these two villains, there's these two people who are, like, kind of, like, fighting this grand war, and one of them can predict, you know, predicts his own death and has, and I just pulled it up on Wikipedia as you were talking, and basically, from Wikipedia, the monitor was murdered by his own assistant, Harbinger, while one of her duplicates was temporarily possessed by one of the anti-monitor's shadow demons. However, he expected the attack and allowed it to happen so his death would release enough energy to protect the last five parallel Earths, long enough for the heroes to lead an assault on the anti-monitor. It sounds like it's ripped right from Lost, or vice versa, where, like, you've got these parallel worlds, and,
well,
you know, this guy...
What's the name of it again?
It's Crisis on Infinite Earths.
Okay.
It's a 12-part series. Yeah, I don't know. You may just want to cut this out, but maybe, like, something you want to mention, like, in a future podcast or whatever.
No, that's cool. Yeah, I'll leave that in. Okay, so I'm going to go go ahead and start the recap of the episode. So here's some of the highlights. The translator in 2007, I'm just going to say 2007 or 2004. So if I say 2007, we're talking about the timeline that we all know and love from all seasons prior. And if I say 2004, then of course I'm talking about the alternate timeline, a.k.a. the Flash sideways. Okay, so 2007. The translator says to the Japanese man, he's alive. Apparently referring to Saeed. That's how the episode starts out. Saeed doesn't notice any side effects other than that he says that he feels lightheaded. Sawyer, meanwhile, is ticked off because Saeed, who he points out is a former Iraqi torturer, was brought back to life and not Juliet. And he doesn't see the justice in that. And, and of course, my thought to that was it's unfortunate that that Sawyer didn't bring Juliet with him. In fact, I even thought that when we were watching the episode last week. I'm like, why didn't you just bring Juliet along with you? That's weird. Saeed was near death, and, you know, Hurley thought that he could save him. So, on the other hand, we know the dead is dead, and, you know, people don't typically come back from the grave. While we're talking about Juliet, just one more thing from the Lost Cast podcast that I didn't have down in my notes. They talked about Juliet's comment when she died. Before she said, "I have something really important to tell you," she tells Sawyer something like, "We can go Dutch." You know, she's talking about going out. We should go out for coffee sometime. We can go Dutch. They talked about a theory that Juliet might have been somehow, like, channeling her alternate timeline self, and that somehow maybe Juliet and Sawyer are going to meet up in the 2004 alternate timeline, and that is kind of where that came from. I thought that was an interesting theory about that. Let's see here. And feel free to jump in, Congested, if you have any thoughts. And people in the chat, of course, point out anything that you think is important that I missed or anything like that.
Will do.
Okay, so 2004, Kate hijacks the cab. We started to see that last week. She won't let Claire out, and Arst gets in the way of the cab, and so they have to stop for a moment. And while they're stopped, Kate sees Jack in the mirror, and she gets this sort of moment, kind of like Jack had on the plane in the last episode, where he just, he gets this weird, deja vu or something, where he feels like he's been there before, or has seen these people before, even though this is the first time he's ever flown on a plane with them. And Kate sort of gets that look when she sees Jack in the mirror. She kind of seems to recognize him. And it was really short. They didn't dwell on that because obviously Kate's trying to get away. And she, so basically the cab driver runs off. So we may never see him again, but at least it was interesting to see the Heroes actor on the show involved with Claire, just like he is on Heroes. Thought that was kind of a fun thing. So the cab driver runs off. Kate takes Claire's purse and then lets her out of the car after Claire keeps asking her to. And when she gets out of the car, we can definitely tell that Claire is absolutely pregnant. So that part of this alternate timeline is the same. 2007, Hurley says to Saeed, "The others captured us again," which is funny. And Jack observes that Saeed's wound is almost completely closed, even though it seems like apparently it's only been minutes since he came out of the water, or maybe an hour or two or something, but his wound is almost completely closed up, Jack observes. That's kind of interesting. It makes you wonder, what is this something to do with the healing properties of the island, or more likely it seems that it had something to do with the water that they dunked him in, and what exactly the water did to him, I don't know. But
it's like the pool of water is like really close to the source of the island's healing properties or something.
Huh. That's an interesting theory. I'm gonna type that in my notes because that's a good one.
And it's also you could almost say Tuck Everlasting, where they drink that water and they live forever. I mean, is that what happened to Richard? Maybe he drank this water and is constantly being rehealed so he doesn't age or something.
Huh. Well, yeah, that's interesting. I guess it could be something like that. But then why wouldn't all of the others at the temple chug the water and make themselves immortal? Or of course, I guess they could have. I don't know. I mean, who knows? But yeah, that's an interesting theory that maybe the water somehow is tied to the healing properties of the island, somehow related to it. So the Japanese guy and his translator want Saeed to go with them alone, which is weird because in the last episode they wanted Jack to do that before Saeed woke up. So I don't know exactly what's going on there. Maybe they were going to do the same experiment on Jack for some reason, but it doesn't quite make sense to me. But in any case, rather than taking Jack aside, now that Saeed's apparently alive again, they want Saeed to go with them alone. Jack puts up a big fuss, and Sawyer intervenes by shooting at one of them, and he takes off. And Sawyer tells Kate, "Don't come after me." The translator says that they need Sawyer back, and Kate volunteers to track him, and Jin volunteers to go with her. In 2004, Kate offers $200 to a mechanic to get her out of the cuffs, and after she gets out, Kate goes to change clothes, looking in Claire's bag, and she sees that there's a photo of Claire pregnant in the bag. I don't know how Kate could not have noticed that Claire was pregnant when she was sitting next to it in the cab, but at the very least, Kate suddenly felt guilty about
my
lady's bag.
My take on that scene was actually a lot like your take on when she saw Jack, and it's when she's looking through that bag, you get that same sort of vibe that you had when Jack was looking out the window at the airplane window at the beginning. You know, like she kind of remembered Claire, or remembered that she's somehow connected to this woman, or like when Jack meets Desmond.
Hmm.
But more like when Jack's looking out the window, or like you said, when she's looking in the mirror.
Yeah,
that's how I took it. I took it like that.
And just really quickly here, Stephanie Mack in the chat, always another person who always comes up with good theories that I haven't considered before. But Stephanie Mack suggests, I couldn't help but wonder if Sawyer was a cop or something in that field. He seemed to know what a 341 was. My thought on that when I was watching the episode last week was just that, you know, Sawyer's a bad guy. Like he knows a lot of police codes and things like that, and so that's why it didn't surprise me last week. But that is interesting to consider. It definitely would be a nice twist.
Yeah, and then what I said, or what I was saying, like sort of in response to that was in the chat was like maybe he was in Australia to bust the guy. Remember how like the guy was setting him up to kill this, you know, to kill. He said he was Sawyer, but, you know, it was actually just some other guy this guy wanted dead, maybe. And then Stephanie Mack was saying, yeah, like, maybe he was working the Tampa case.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Or, no, it's not Tampa, it's the Tallahassee.
Well, it's the Tallahassee
job.
Yeah, so that's an interesting possibility. So you were saying that he could go to bust Hibbs, is what you're saying, right? Hibbs is the guy who set up Sawyer and told him to go kill Frank Duckett.
Right. Yeah, Frank Duckett.
Uh-huh. That's interesting, too. Here, I'm going to stick that in my notes along with the other Sawyer comment. That's good. Some good alternate theories on that. Okay, so Claire's bag has a photo of her pregnant and a Shamu whale doll. Now, when I watched that, I don't know if it's Shamu, but, you know, in any case, it's like a killer whale orca doll. And it was interesting, you know, it's funny that I didn't get that impression that Kate recognized Claire, but I can see, I mean, I'll have to watch that scene again and see if I kind of get that vibe from it. But in any case, Kate seems to have some sort of conscience moment getting to her. And she decides that she's going to go back and pick up Claire, give her bags back, and give her a ride. But before we get to that, we go back to 2007. Kate says to Jack, "I'll take care of James. You take care of Saeed." And the Japanese man we see in the next scene has Saeed strapped down. He blows some sort of dust on him or something like that. He hooks wires into his skin and electrocutes him. He's torturing him, or so it seems. And the translator tells Saeed that it was a test to be sure, and Saeed asks to be sure of what, and the translator says, "Don't worry, you passed." Then after Saeed walks away, the translator says to the Japanese-speaking man, "I just lied to him, didn't I?" And the Japanese man says in English, "Yes." So, of course, we find out shortly after that what this test is all about. In fact, I guess we can talk about that now. So we find out later in the episode the test is whether he has the sickness. And so how is it that sticking wires in his skin, blowing dust on him, and searing him with a hot poker are going to tell them whether he has the sickness or not? That I have no idea about. But somehow that's the test that they're using to determine whether he has the sickness. Okay, so in 2004, Kate, in the alternate timeline, Kate drives back to Claire and gives her her bags back and offers her a ride. Claire says that the family who's supposed to pick her up from the airport never showed up, so she's going to their house. And, of course, my immediate thought about that was not so much that they bailed on her, but that either one, they were going to be bad parents and Claire would change her mind, or two, there never really was a family at all and the psychic lied to her. But it turned out that neither one of those was the case, we'll get to that in a moment. If you remember from way back in the episode where Carl was being held in room 23 and Aldo was the other who was sitting outside reading Stephen Hawking's book, A Brief History of Time. We haven't seen Aldo in a while, and he's giving Kate a hard time. You know, hey, you don't even remember me, do you? You know, you're the guy that when you guys escaped, you knocked out, and, you know, and this was, of course, in season three. So he's pretty ticked off about Kate and doesn't want to be the person helping her. And they see a trap, and another other whose name is Justin, I believe, says that Rousseau died years ago, of course, referring to when Kimi and his team killed her. And so, you know, they're kind of wondering who set this trap and what the deal is with that. And, of course, we find out later in the episode what that's all about. And that was definitely an interesting twist. I look forward to talking about that in a few minutes. The Japanese Man, also in 2007, says that Said is infected. So he's talking to Jack. You know, Jack just wants to know what the heck is going on. And so the Japanese Man says that Said is infected and that Said needs to take some medicine. And so he hands this to Jack to give to Said, and Jack asks what will happen if he doesn't give Said the medicine. And the Japanese Man says that the infection will spread. And it wasn't clear whether he meant to other people or it'll get worse, although a comment that he made later seemed to indicate that he was talking about that that the infection would get worse in Said, not necessarily that it would spread to other people.
Sorry, hey Josh. Someone in the chat had a cool theory, guest 21, that the indicator that Said sort of failed the test was putting that ash on him or whatever it was should have prevented him from feeling pain when he was burned.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. And I had stepped away, and that's what the confusion was in the chat. That I didn't know if you had mentioned it already. I thought that was a really, yeah, really cool theory.
So, okay. I don't know exactly why that would be. I mean, I get the whole, like, ash, you know, like the smoke monster can't cross the ash and things like that. It's an interesting theory. I guess we don't
know
enough. That's about what the ash is or what it does.
Right, yeah, we don't know the mechanics of it, but, I mean, there's very little to go on as far as, like, what was indicated to them from the test or whatever. And that's actually, like, that works. You know what I mean? That's the first theory I've heard on what it could actually be.
Yeah.
Like, as far as how they were judging Said.
Yeah, so thanks, Guest 21, for that theory. That's a good idea. Good possibility. Okay, so where are we here? Also in 2007, so we now jump to Miles questioning Said about his death. Miles obviously knows an awful lot about death and what people see when they die because, of course, he talks to dead people or can hear them anyway. And so he questions Said about death. And he says, so there was no white light or anything like that. And Said says, I just remember being shot. So this gives us some sort of a hint that Said's death, if you want to call it a death, was very unusual. Miles, you know, apparently in Miles' experience, when people die, they tend to see a white light or something to that effect. And Said saw nothing like that. And so Miles is trying to figure out, you know, what went on. And Hurley asks a funny question, especially if you listen to the official podcast. He says, you're not a zombie, right? And Said answers, no, I am not a zombie. Of course, the zombie season is season 7.
Well, originally it was season 6.
Right, yeah.
And then after they announced the end date, they started calling it season 7 or whatever, yeah.
Right. Oh yeah, well I guess it's true. So this is the zombie season originally.
Yeah, like in the really early official podcast, like season 2 and stuff, it was always like, yeah, season 6 is zombie season.
So, even though they said they're not really ever going to do zombies and that's just a joke. Apparently, we do really have a living zombie on the show, but it's Saeed, so it's not like he's flesh eater or something, as far as we know yet. Okay, so but it was a funny comment, at least from Hurley. I had to mention that. Stephanie Mack, regarding Miles and Miles' concern, says, I read it as a no read as well. I thought the look was because he had no reading, like he should have if he were dead.
Okay.
So Saeed tells Jack that if Jack wants him to take the pill, he will. And we don't find out until later whether Jack gives him the pill. Meanwhile, Jin tells Kate that he wants to find the Ajira plane so that he can find Sun. So
when have we heard that before? Sorry.
Well, yeah.
He
wants to reunite with his wife, and just like she wants to reunite with him, and they're trying to find each other and all that. So, in any case, so 2004. Let's see. Okay, well, Stephanie Mack says, I think it's the same reason that he was so drawn to Claire in season 4. Claire also had no read and then turned bad. Huh.
That's cool.
Huh. So maybe she already had the sickness even before Christian Shepherd showed up, then, is what you're saying. And if that's the case, when did she contract the sickness? That's what I'm most curious about. But
It was after the house blew up. And it's like she sort of half died, and then she was, seeing Charlie and stuff.
The explosion. Man, I'm gonna have to go rewatch that episode because I don't really remember much about the barracks explosion and what happened to Claire and things.
Yeah, basically what happens is Kimi or one of those guys has like a RPG and they shoot it at the house and it blows up and Sawyer, that's when Sawyer's like running around getting shot at, like hiding behind a fence and stuff, and when he grabs her, the first thing she says is Charlie, and that's where you have the deleted scene on the season 4 DVD where she asks Hurley if she's dead, if they're dead. When they're back in the house.
I don't think I ever saw that deleted scene. I'm going to have to look at that.
Oh, okay.
Now, obviously, if it's a deleted scene, it's not canon, but...
Right.
But that is interesting, though. Okay, so I'm going to put in my notes when did Claire get infected?
And it's after that that Sawyer and Miles and Claire are sort of like making their way back to the beach, and then they make camp that night. During that day, like Miles is looking at her funny, and then they make camp, and that's when Christian comes. It's getting infected is what brought Christian to her or something.
Yeah, very interesting. Jason Heilman in the chat says, but what if she did die and came back to life infected? That's why she did not care about Charlie being dead also. Okay. Liam Capranos, or Capranos, I don't know, in the chat says, Claire says, I'll be fine. Miles says, I'm not too sure about that from The Shape of Things to Come. Stephanie Mack says maybe Miles sent something and wanted to protect Aaron. Okay. Oh yeah. And said that he wanted to carry Aaron. He said he was good with kids, and she said I'll live, which she didn't. Apparently, anyway.
Well, it's like it's what is live? I mean, she's alive, but.
Is she?
Only as alive as Saeed is, I guess. I mean, and Saeed is alive.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, well, Saeed's alive in some form. I mean, he's not totally dead, so he's walking around anyway, and he has his own memories and things like that. So, yeah, it's weird. Okay. So, Saeed Okay, we already read that part. So, okay, 2004, Claire asks Kate to come in with her to the adoptive parents' house because she doesn't want to go in alone. So, of course, you know, this relationship is starting to build between Claire and Kate all over again, like it happened, like, you know, similar to how they developed a relationship and became friends on the island. One more comment from Jason Heilman. But Claire never got on that water, so, and I think what Jason means there is just that, you know, Sade got in the island, got in the water, and perhaps that's what, you know, caused him to become infected by not, you know, I don't know. And then Claire didn't get in the water, and somehow she became infected. Well, we don't really know how Danielle, well, anyway, I guess we'll kind of talk about that later, but, it, you know, was Danielle infected? And that's kind of another question that kind of comes up, and so was she ever in the water? Apparently Ben has been in the water, you know, because Sade and Ben were both taken back to the temple to be healed. That's another good point from Jason. So, could Ben also have the sickness?
This is sort of what I was just typing in the chat. I'm just saying that, I think there's two things going on here. There's the being healed, you know, by the water, and then there's the sickness. And I think in Sade, both those things were kind of combined together. But that having the sickness doesn't necessarily have anything to do with, you know, being in the water. That it just so happens that Sade has the sickness and was also in the water. And I think it's almost like a red herring, you know? To throw us off a little.
Right. Of course, the water was, you know, wasn't clear like it was supposed to have been for some reason. So that could have had something to do with it, too.
Yeah.
Okay, so the woman who answers the door when Claire and Kate go to the door, the woman says, she's crying, she says, "My husband, he left me, and believe me, I wanted the baby so much, but I can't do it alone. I'm sorry. Look, I know I should have called you." And, of course, you know, they're upset because, you know, Claire just flew all the way from freaking Australia and only to find out at the door that, you know, she's being rejected. Claire suddenly screams that she thinks the baby is coming, and they're standing at the doorstep, which is, you know, that's a little different too, because it took Claire quite a bit longer to feel like she needed to have the baby in the original timeline. Although, you know, this actually might be a good place to point out this interesting Easter egg. Jack from Jay and Jack's podcast stopped by earlier, and he forwarded a screenshot of Claire's ultrasound, and the date on the ultrasound is not September 22nd, 2004, but October 22nd, 2004. So if, you know, if that's not a mistake in the writing, perhaps, you know, they all, for some reason, you know, went on the same flight, but a month later. I don't know how that makes any sense. That all the same people would be on the same flight, but a month later in this version of reality. But in any case...
Well, not all of them are on it.
You know, what I was going to say really quickly is just that that Claire, you know, I don't know exactly how much longer it was until Claire had the baby on the island, but it was probably... Was it about a month?
I think it's like 20 days or so. It's not quite at the end of season one. So what is season one? Like the equivalent of like a month or so? So I think it's like under a month.
Yeah. Well, in any case, it.
Yeah, but that would, yeah, I see where you're going with this.
Yeah.
Yes.
So if it really did happen in, you know, if the alternate timeline is really happening in October and that's not just a mistake, then, you know, that puts Claire closer to the same date where she gave birth to Aaron on the island. So that's an interesting thing. But who knows? I mean, there have been, you know, there's more than once on the show there have been mistakes in these things that seem to be Easter eggs. So it's possible that that's a mistake. Although they did show the ultrasound up close, and I mean, you know, it happens. I mean, they've had newspaper articles. Master Knack a while ago wrote a guest post on my blog where he pointed out that the baseball articles, you know, didn't seem to fit quite right in the timeline. So, I mean, sometimes they use props that don't necessarily, I mean, I guess you could almost say the props are not necessarily canon in some cases.
Like, yeah, and stuff like a newspaper article that they're just using a newspaper. I mean, like in 5 years when, you know, people are watching this on DVD or whatever, like, it's not going to matter really that it was a newspaper article from 2008 or whatever in a scene that's supposed to be from 2004. But I think something like the ultrasound is kind of, it's something they created totally themselves. You know what I mean? Uh-huh. Whereas like a prop that is a actual newspaper is something that they were just, you know, they didn't want to write a whole fake newspaper, so they just used a newspaper. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I suppose so. I mean, you know, I would, especially on Lost, you expect a higher, you know, a very high degree of attention to detail when it comes to props and things like that because people scrutinize them so much.
Yeah. Well, it's like they went back and they changed Penny's Desmond's photograph in the hatch after they casted Sonia Waldner. So, like, early in season two, when you see the photo, it's, like, some other lady. But then on the DVDs, it's her in the photo.
Huh, right. I do remember that. I think even in some re-airings of the episode, they showed Sonia Walger in the picture as well.
Yeah, there you go. So they're conscious of it, like you're saying. Like, the, you know, the high standard and stuff.
Right. I think Kate Jack in the chat is saying that... according to Lostpedia, Aaron was born November 1st, 2004. Well, in the original timeline.
It is November 1st because I edited this video of like all the events that happened on November 1st. Yeah, it's November 1st.
Okay.
According to Lostpedia, which, you know, is obviously like a timeline created by users, but it's...
It's usually pretty accurate, though.
It's very accurate, yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, there have been things on... I've gone back to that and found it to be a very useful resource now and then, especially when you're comparing, you know, the timeline of events, I don't know, for a number of reasons, like whether you're looking at flashback timelines or different things like that, it can be really useful. Okay. Okay. Alex, a.k.a. Congested, gave the link to that video on YouTube, Events of November 1st, 2004. Cool. I'll put a link to that in the show notes if people want to check that out.
Yeah, the only thing I missed was Bernard on the other end of the walkie with Boone. But, you know, c'est la vie.
Cool. Let's see. Okay, so getting back to the episode recap. So 2007, Kate goes to the Dharma Barracks to look for James Sawyer, and he's plying up the floorboards in the room where he used to live with Juliet, and he pulls out a shoebox with something of Juliet's in it. If I'm not mistaken, I think it was like a piece of cloth or something, and he smelled it. Did I get that right? I kind of looked up, like, right as that scene was changing. So
oh, no, that was, I didn't know what it was until they were on the dock. It was the bag that had the ring in it.
The bag, yeah, okay. And then Sawyer sees Kate and tells him that she was worried about him, and he just walks past her. And I think she had this concerned look on her face there, and I think it was because, you know, Kate is really trying to get Sawyer to go back to the temple with her. They're of course concerned about you know, the smoke monster coming after him. I don't know why.
But her. But I think the concern in that scene is just it's you know, it's back to Juliet. Is she feels horrible that, you know, she feels horrible for him. You know, that he just lost her. And I think, or that's kind of how I read it. That's kind of why she waits, and she realizes, even without knowing exactly what he's doing in there, that it has something to do with her. Or that's how I read it.
Okay. Yeah, I can see that too. Okay, so in 2004, alternate timeline, Kate takes Claire to the hospital. A police car pulls up, and so, of course, you know, Kate decides, yeah, I'm going in too. And Ethan introduces himself as not Ethan Rom, or Dr. Rom, but Dr. Goodspeed. If you remember, Ethan is the son of Horace Goodspeed and Amy from the island, who were part of the Dharma Initiative. So since Ethan introduces himself as Dr. Goodspeed, this seems to indicate that, you know, that he made it off the island safely and never became associated with the others at all.
Yeah, and my theory there is just that, you know, when the women and children were being evacuated before the time split, he, you know, Amy was put on the sub with the baby, and that in you know, in the proper timeline, eventually she came back, you know, to the Dharma Initiative, whereas in the, you know, post-nuke timeline, you know, there's nothing to come back to.
Well, okay, now I'm getting confused on the timeline. So you think that she came back to the island at some point, like after the
right. In the proper timeline, like she, and by proper I mean the one we're all familiar with, like,
yeah,
for six seasons, she leaves the island when they evacuate it, you know, when everyone's getting evacuated to the sub, and then she just comes back, you know. Like,
well,
nothing happened, so all the Dharma Initiative come back.
Well, I guess,
you know,
where I'm confused is because didn't Amy die in, like, 1974 or something like that?
No, that was Paul. That was her. That was her husband or boyfriend or whatever.
Oh, well, did Amy?
Amy is the lady who's having the picnic. Who?
I remember that.
Okay.
Did she end up with Horace though after that?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's what I thought. I'd forgotten that she was originally with Paul and not with.
And Ethan
Horace.
Was born, you know, a few days before. All the other, you know, before they evacuated the island. So Ethan had just been born.
Okay. Really? Oh, that was only days prior?
Mm-hmm. Because Juliet delivered him right before the Oceanic Six showed up. It was like the same day, like Jin, it was the same day they found Jin, or Jin found them, or whatever.
Okay. Well, in any case, somehow, so, he goes by the name Goodspeed, so I guess he's taking Horace's last name in any case. I wonder.
Yeah,
we
mentioned the Ethan Rom thing on Oath podcast, and I think the best answer that was that, you know, Ethan Goodspeed doesn't make a good anagram. That was what O said. But
well,
to me, like, that falls under my, like, what I call, you know, new lost and old lost. And, like, in old lost, he was Ethan Rom, and in new lost, he's Ethan Goodspeed. So, you know, it's like when new lost and old lost is my way of kind of saying that, yes, the writers do kind of make some stuff up as they go along, you know.
Well, my thought on that maybe is that whenever, I don't remember, did Ethan introduce himself, including his last name, when he went to recruit Juliet? Did he actually say his name was Ethan Rom at that time, or did he just call himself Ethan?
Good question. I'll get an answer for you. That's a good question.
Because
he wouldn't have had a reason to lie. If he introduced himself, like, as Ethan Rom when Hurley was doing the manifest, maybe he lied. I think that's
when
he... Yeah. Let's see. That's a good question. I will look it up as you are continuing.
Cool. Thanks. Okay. Josh Spivy from Lost Flashback said, congested, you should do more videos like that. Yeah. Well, he may just do some more Lost-related videos.
You know what? You know, and you can cut this out, but I've been waiting for another sort of set of moments like that where I could do a video like that, and there just haven't been any that really seem to call for making a video like that. The only thing is maybe that I can re-edit that one in a few episodes to match, you know, the new timeline, November 1st or whatever. But, yeah, I had a lot of fun making that video. But, yeah, anyway.
Stephanie Mack just kind of goes off on a little tangent here, but it's interesting. So he's the only baby we think was conceived and born safely on the island. A lot of us think that Amy went on to become another Amelia from the book club. Well, I haven't heard that Amy-Amelia theory before, but it's interesting anyway. But, I guess it's plausible enough. Although she definitely looks a lot more than 30 years older when she's Amelia. I don't know. I guess I could see that. If she's, I guess that's possible. But in any case, as far as Ethan being conceived and born safely on the island, I think the answer to that is, I don't know if that's necessarily the case. I mean, he's the only one that we know of, maybe, but at the same time, the Towerette statue still existed in 1974 when they first jumped to that period of time. Did it?
No. The statue, basically what happens is Sawyer, okay, it's right as Locke is going into the hole, and the first flash after, which is a regular time jump, jumps them back to when the statue was whole. And then when they jump to 1974, they don't see the statue on the horizon anymore. So the statue, by 1974, had been, you know, gone.
Okay. Yeah, okay, that's true. I just remember them showing, like, when they were jumping around in time, but I guess that was, the one where they actually showed the statue was the same one, I think, where it's the flaming arrows then, if I'm not mistaken.
No, the one where they show the statue is that one, right when the time jumps end. The episode, it was LaFleur. It was in LaFleur. You see it right at the beginning of LaFleur.
Okay, so was there, was there a 1974 then?
No, it's the time jump right before that, to an unknown time.
Oh, okay.
We know that the statue was there in the late 19th century because you see it when the Black Rock is coming, but that's sort of, so we know that sometime between, you know, I guess maybe the 1880s or 1890s and 1974, sometime in that period it's gone. So it's either the people from the Black Rock took it out or the American soldiers took it out. That'd be my guess.
Interesting. All right. In any case, I guess we don't really know when the fertility problem started, but obviously it was sometime after Ethan was born anyway. That's my take on it, because they didn't really talk about Ethan being a miracle baby and things like that. So I think it was at some point after that. And I thought maybe it had something to do with the destruction of the Towerette statue because, you know, of the symbolism of, you know, who Towerette as an Egyptian god, you know, stands for. And, you know, having ties with, you know, fertility and so forth. But, I don't know. In any case, that is interesting, though. That we don't really know at what point it no longer was safe for people to have babies on the island or to attempt.
Well, no, we learned that tonight. Like, people have never been, according to Dogen, like, they've never been able to. Like, he says, I got here the same way everyone else got here. And to me, that implies that, like, no one was born on the island.
Oh, wow. I totally missed that. Yeah, I didn't even get that at all out of what he said, but that's a good point.
Now I'll know, but this is probably, this may be a production error, but there's a screen cap from the premiere of this season where, like, you see the others, and there's, like, a little boy, not Zach, but just some other little boy who's younger, maybe, like, 6 years old or something. So, like, the question is then, like, how they get this kid. But it's an extra, and I'm guessing maybe it's just like, oh, yeah, they, you know, they're always stealing children or whatever. Like, it was a separate, unseen others mission to steal this boy or something. But, yeah, there is, a little kid about, you know, 6 or 5, really young, in the premiere, an extra.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Let's see. Okay, so 2007, 2007. Oh, wait, hold on. I guess we're not quite done yet with 2004. So Kate's in the hospital. And so we start, oh, that's where we left off. We started talking about Ethan and his name. So he introduced himself as Dr. Goodspeed. He says in order to stop the baby from coming right now, she would need to take drugs via a needle injection. And so she decides, I guess, to go ahead and have the baby. And she asks, they start to be concerned that they're not picking up the heartbeat on the monitor. And Claire starts panicking. Is my baby okay? Is Aaron okay? And Kate seemed to perk up when she said, is Aaron okay? So, again, that's another sort of moment where Kate almost seemed to have some recollection. Like, it seemed, it was like a deja vu moment, sort of, for Kate. And it's interesting, too, because Claire didn't pick the name Aaron until much later when they were on the island. It was well after Aaron was born that she finally named him, because Charlie, of course, called him Turniphead for a while.
Yeah.
So that's interesting, that all of a sudden, she says later that the name just sort of came to her, which, that's really interesting how all that happened. But,
Were we discussing this before we started recording, or was I discussing this with you?
No.
Where it was in Exodus, where she sort of blurts out Aaron right as Charlie's and Saeed are going to run off. Rousseau's just taken Aaron, and she's like, get him back, get Aaron back. And it's sort of similar to kind of how it happened in this episode. It's almost like she had, in her subconscious, been mulling over the name Aaron or something.
That's interesting.
But like in both timelines, yeah.
Right. Okay, so 2007. Sawyer blames himself for Juliet's death because he convinced her to stay. That's what he tells Kate on the dock. Sawyer says that he guesses that some people are meant to be alone, and says, I was going to ask her to marry me. I think that's what he said. And then he throws this wedding ring into the water and tells Kate that she can make it back by nightfall, and Kate starts crying. I don't know if Kate was just feeling sorry about Juliet's death, or whether she was just in general, like, feeling bad for James and how he feels. In any case, but Kate cried at that point and sat on the pier for a moment. It should have been a touching scene, but for me, I was just kind of wondering about Kate's motives, like if she's still trying to kind of be the con person and try to, do whatever she can to convince Sawyer to go back,
I don't know. I think, she definitely wants that, but I feel like there's a part of her that just feels, horrible for him. I mean, this is someone who she cares about, and, like, this guy is obviously, like, I mean, we've never seen Sawyer like that in that scene. And, shedding tears like that, it's just...
One of the thoughts that came to me was that when Sawyer throwing the ring into the water and saying, I guess some people are, meant to be alone, one of the thoughts that went through my mind at the time watching that scene was Kate maybe was crying because she's like, wow, I'll never have a chance with Sawyer again. He just threw away this ring and says, I'm meant to be alone, basically. That was one thing that I thought was maybe a possible reason for her crying.
Mm-hmm.
I
don't disagree with you, but just my interpretation of it is just like, she just feels his pain, and she's like, just sad that like Juliet, like she's hurting for him. And a part of it is kind of what you're saying, I think, where like, she loves him, clearly. But and because of that, she's sort of empathetic to his, his hurt,
Oh, sure, yeah. Well, she has been in love with Sawyer before, and so maybe she's kind of falling for him again,
Yeah.
In any case, enough about the
relationship. And just one thing about the ring, it's like definitely, you know, there's a parallel here between this and Desmond and Penny, where he tosses the ring into the Thames.
Oh, yeah.
You know.
Yeah, that's a good point, too. Okay, so Jack asks the Japanese man why he has a translator, and he explains that he has to differentiate himself from those he leads, and says that it also makes it easier for him to kind of keep people from being directly mad at him when he's speaking through a translator. So he says that his name is Dogen, and apparently it's spelled D-O-G-E-N. That's how it is on Lostpedia, and they were talking about that name on Lostcast too, so I think it must have been like in the casting call or maybe in the episode synopsis for this episode or something. But his name is Dogen, and they said that there was some significance to that name. It had something to do with like Zen or something like that. But Jack starts to take the pill that was intended for Said. And Dogen makes him spit it out and demands, and then Jack demands to know what's in it. And then Dogen admits that it's poison. So they were, if that's true, if he's telling the truth this time, then that means that they were trying to kill Said to prevent the sickness from spreading. Basically, they felt that that was the only way. That's an interesting thing because, you know, I think I started to discuss this earlier, but Jacob said that Said needed to live, but did he mean the uninfected Said needed to live, like, or that Said, as in zombie Said, needed to live? I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. But I do think there's and there may be a reason to it, but I think, you know, it's like, why couldn't they just kill Said with, like, you know, they have all these guns, and you know they're clearly, or they could just kill him. You know, any way they wanted, they could kill this guy. Yet it has to be this little, you know, green pill. You know what I mean? Like it with poison in it. It just seems weird to me. But then they tie it to sort of the free will thing. Jack has to convince him that he should want to take it. And maybe that's why they can't shoot him. Like, they have a rule against just killing someone, that it has to be, you know, administered or done, you know, through someone they trust. Or I don't know. But it's very weird to me that they can't just kill him if they want him dead.
Yeah, I agree. That is weird. You know, there must be some significance to that. I mean, other than maybe, you know, if they use medicine, then they can, you know, claim that, oh, well, the medicine didn't work or something like that. You know, it takes the blame off of him, just like he uses this translator. It sort of takes the blame off of him because he can point to the medicine and say that it didn't work, even though it was actually poison.
Yeah.
It gives them a way to kill Said without it being blatantly obvious. It's without,
yeah, like without the blood being on his hands. I think it has to be something like that. But I really, you know, that's something I hope they, even if briefly, they could address, because I think it's odd. I find it odd that they can't just kill him.
Yeah. I think the other thing that has to do with that is just that obviously Jack and the others would be pretty ticked off if they just shot Said and said, no, he needed to die, he was infected. Because they wouldn't believe him, you know.
Yeah, but I mean, imagine if Jack had given him the pill. I mean, they would know it was poison if Said, you know, curled over or keeled over, or whatever the term is. And in a way, they would be just as mad. I mean, and then he says that, and then he makes that comment about it being, I don't know, he doesn't say free will, but, you know, Said has to willingly take the pill. So it's like, is it, you know, no one's going to willingly take a gunshot to the head, you know?
That's a good point, too. That's interesting. But then again, of course, they're lying to him about what the pill is, too.
Right, exactly. Responsible. So that's kind of why, like, it's very ambiguous, and I don't know. I'd like some answers there.
Yeah. Okay, here's another comment from Stephanie Mack. Kind of a theory about that. I think this is getting getting back to my question about Jacob, whether Jacob meant uninfected Saeed needs to live or infected Saeed, whatever, needs to live. Stephanie Mack says, I think it meant it would be bad if he died and then was taken over, not bad because he died, because they didn't care when he originally died. If by that you mean when they're dunking him under the water, I think that was just part of the treatment. I think that the holding him under the water seemed to be part of the treatment. That's why they were stopping Jack and everybody from diving in and saving Saeed. So, I don't know. Anyway, so 2004, there's a Detective Rasmussen who asks for Joan Hart, and having somewhat participated in the Lost rewatch over the hiatus, I recognize Joan Hart as the nickname that Kate used in an episode in season one, when we hear this name, it's an alias that Kate has used in the past, and then Claire tells the detectives that the cab driver left already, meaning Kate, and Kate comes in and thanks Claire for basically saving her from being arrested. And interestingly, Kate tells Claire, so what did you do anyway? And then Kate says, would you believe me if I told you I didn't do it? So do you think that in this timeline she didn't kill Wayne and they just thought she did? I kind of think that she still killed Wayne, but I don't know. It was
just
weird.
I posed that question, in the Big O podcast, and it, I loved the Big O podcast, but it went a little ADD with a bunch of people, and we never really got back to it. But, I'd like to think that Kate is innocent. I mean, I that's kind of what I'm hoping. I'd like to think that. And, beyond that, I don't know. I think it's hard to tell if she's innocent or not. But, I mean, we've got that Comic-Con video, and I guess it's a good time to mention it. Did you see it, the one with John Walsh?
No.
Okay, well, basically at Comic-Con, they did these videos, I guess, hinting at what season 6 would be. And one of the videos is Hurley, doing an ad for Mr. Klux. And the other one is this video. It's like a 2 or 3 minute video that's America's Most Wanted, and they actually got John Walsh to do the video for them. And it's like he's talking about Kate Austin, this killer, and in this video, she doesn't kill her stepfather. She tries to, but instead of doing it at his house, she tries to kill him at his workplace, and he didn't go into work that night. Some other guy did, and she ended up killing this innocent guy by mistake.
Oh, weird. Well, of course, and obviously Lost, the stuff they show at Comic-Con.
Those are not, those are not necessarily canon.
Right.
So,
but that is interesting, though, because we do know that the Mr. Klux ad with Hurley in it, that really happened.
that may as well be canon.
Yeah.
And he's talking about, the Outback Chicken or whatever in the commercial. I've just visited the Outback, and so it's kind of like after the flight.
Uh-huh.
And in the episode, he's talking on the phone with someone in the premiere about, using the term Outback for the food. If you read the transcript or whatever, he's he's basically, he's on the phone with someone from the company, and, I guess they were having trouble clearing the term Outback. And I digress.
Right.
Yeah,
that's interesting.
But,
okay, so... In the alternate timeline, did her mom set the bomb? I guess 21 said. that's interesting. And framed Kate for Wayne's death.
Oh, that's kind of cool. I like that.
Yeah, that is interesting.
You know what? But even if Kate is innocent, she's still extremely badass. she's still kicking the marshal's ass and playing GTA and like stealing cars and
right. Well, yeah, the executive producers did say that, you know, these are basically the same characters. I mean, Jack is still a surgeon and all that kind of stuff. So they did say that there's not really any like super dramatic changes in who these characters are. You know, they're still basically the same characters we know. It's just that certain events have happened differently.
Right, you're talking about the official Lost podcast, right?
Yes, yeah.
Right, because they also said that, like, because Locke kind of does the same thing when he's talking to Boone. He says that he went on a walkabout, and they're like, no, he didn't go on a walkabout. And I almost wish they didn't say that on the podcast, because I kind of liked it being more ambiguous. But maybe that's the same deal with Kate. Like, maybe she's kind of imagining what her life would be if she was innocent, just like Locke was kind of imagining what his life would be had he gone on the walkabout. And they're both kind of living that reality for someone else, you know, like with
right.
Boone and Claire.
I'm going to get into the official podcast a little bit more when we get to kind of pre-spoiler section. I like to talk about some of the official podcast stuff because some of the stuff in there could be considered spoilers. So.
All right, yeah, and that... Yeah, even that, if you want to cut, just cut out whatever you want. Like, I guess maybe that is a spoiler. I don't know. Sorry if anyone in the chat room.
Oh, no, I don't think so. I think that's okay. I don't know. Let's jump back. Let me see where we were. Okay, so, yeah, we were just talking about whether Kate actually killed her biological father in this timeline. And then Kate suggests that Claire should keep the baby, and Kate says, Aaron's a great name. Claire says, I don't know why I said it. It's just like I knew it or something. And so they wish each other luck and part ways. So we'll see if they ever end up reconnecting. I wouldn't be surprised if they do for some reason. 2007, Sawyer goes inside his house. Kate fills her canteen. Meanwhile, Jack asks why would you people want to kill Saeed? And then the Japanese man says we believe he has been claimed, and he says there is a darkness growing in him, and once it reaches his heart, everything your friend once was will be gone. Josh Spivey from Lost Flashbacks a little earlier said wondered whether they meant that the sickness would spread to other people or around his body. And this is what I think I said I was going to kind of get back to that when we brought it up earlier. I think this line kind of answers that, is that they think that it's going to reach his heart. It seems like they're talking about spreading inside him. And that's not to say that it wouldn't also spread to other people, but at least I think that's what he meant earlier in the episode based on this comment now, that it's going to reach his heart. And then everything your friend once was will be gone, is the end of that quote. Jack says, how can you be sure of that? And this is where it gets kind of interesting, because then the Japanese-speaking man says to Jack, because it happened to your sister, that's how he can be sure of that. And, of course, Jack looks confused. Now, did Jack know that Claire...
Yeah, he knows, you know.
Okay. Yeah, I thought so. I thought at some point... do you remember when that was that he found that out?
In, what was the name of the episode? The one where they have Christian's funeral. And it was someplace nice
right.
Back home?
Yeah, so it was post-island. That's interesting.
Yeah, it was one of the season 4 Oceanic 6. I think it was someplace nice back home where they have the funeral. And basically Claire's mom shows up and, says my sister was on the plane. And that, you know, she breaks it all down for him.
Hmm.
I'm sorry, my daughter was on the plane, you know, and and that, you know, your father, yeah.
Oh yeah, no, I totally remember that scene. Yeah, I was just trying to also catch up with things that people were saying in the chat there too.
But he knows.
All right, let's see here. Stephanie Mack says, you have to smarten up in this chat. Josh keeps an eye on us and quotes us often. Look alive. Okay. So we're going to get back to that whole because it happened to your sister thing in a moment. But obviously he must be talking about Claire. Claire, apparently, the darkness grew within her and reached her heart, and now everything that she is gone, or everything she was gone, based on, you know, what he claims happened to Jack's sister. So Jin, meanwhile, steps on a bear trap, and so Aldo tries to shoot him. They, you know, Aldo and what's his name with the J? I forget his name. Anyway, the other Justin. Thank you. Aldo and Justin come back. Aldo tries to shoot Jin after he steps in this bear trap, and then as Aldo is preparing to shoot Jin, Claire comes out of the jungle, totally looking like Rousseau, and she shoots Aldo, I think, at least twice in the chest, and then she shot Justin as well. So I'm pretty sure that Aldo is dead, and it's ambiguous whether Justin died. But so this brings up a lot of interesting things to consider. Claire coming out looking like Rousseau, and apparently her having the darkness growing within her and reaching her heart, and, you know, apparently she has the sickness. And so that seems to mean that, you know, I mean, just judging by her appearance and all that kind of stuff, that Danielle Rousseau had the sickness after all. It wasn't really her crew that had the sickness. I don't know. Does anybody disagree with that? That's what I got out of that when I saw that.
Yeah, I'd agree. I think, you know, one of the questions it sort of raises is, you know, what was it about Rousseau and Claire and Saeed? You know, what is it about the three of them that these people would want to kill? Because, I mean, let's say Saeed is infected. I mean, Rousseau was a little nuts, but, I mean, why would you want to, you know, kill her? Why would the others want to kill someone who has this sickness?
I don't know.
Yeah,
that's
I don't
a good
know
question. Because, I mean, oh, yeah. Rousseau was still, like, hanging out with the H-15 survivors. I mean,
yeah,
she,
I mean,
she's
she
a little
nuts,
crazy,
but she wasn't, you know, she wasn't just like, you know, Jason or whatever, you know, running around the island killing people or, you know.
Right.
Like,
yeah.
Totally
yeah,
nuts.
That is interesting. Josh, let's see. Josh says, I liked Justin. Justin was like in two scenes. How can he like him? I guess just because he was a little bit nicer to the Losties than...
because he was like the one guy who was actually like willing to explain stuff. He was like,
oh,
yeah,
yeah.
I'll tell you about, you know, no, shut up. I'll tell you, no, shut up.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that's true.
like the one guy on Lost is willing to actually just, like, you know, sit down and, like, just tell you stuff.
Right. Okay, a couple more little things here left in the episode. I think that was the main thing, but I wanted to kind of discuss this Claire thing a little bit more. So apparently, you know, judging by Claire's appearance and knowing that she has the sickness, apparently, you know, we can probably guess, probably assume that Rousseau also had the sickness. And so Claire, Ratface said earlier, I think before we started recording, Ratface is somebody who participated in the chat. I'm not calling people names. Ratface said... Claire was hanging with Christian, so there is the opportunity for her to get infected, meaning that she got infected after hanging out with Christian. Well, I'm not so sure about that. I mean, I guess we already talked about this a little bit. You know, maybe she got infected at the barracks. At the very least, I think she was infected before she walked off with Christian and left her baby behind. I think that's pretty clear, because there's no way, you know, again, that a loving mother would leave her own daughter behind. So, so what does this mean about Christian? If Claire has this darkness inside of her and she walked off with her dead father, that seems to imply that, and again, and because the others who are at the temple say that this is a darkness and a sickness, and they're on Jacob's side. This seems to imply that Christian is on the side of Jacob's nemesis, you know, the man, you know, the man in black.
The smoke monster. Let's just call it. I mean, it's the smoke monster. You know, it's like, kind of like to me, like smoke monster trumps man in black and Jacob's nemesis. It's like all those terms are gone now. It's just like he's the smoke monster. But no.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Yeah. Well, except that, of course, you know, it's not his real name. I mean, he apparently has some name, but we just don't know
probably.
It yet. And
yeah.
So everyone's trying to come up with something to call him to identify him. And
but,
I don't know.
Yeah, but I think, like, yeah, like back to the thing, like, it's if she was infected prior to meeting him, the infection doesn't necessarily have to correlate with him precisely. Like, maybe it's something he can take advantage of, and that's why they want to kill Saeed. But that people can still sort of, you know, operate independently, in the case of Rousseau, with this illness without him necessarily, you know, taking advantage of them, like perhaps he took advantage of Claire.
Uh-huh.
That's a theory. I don't know.
Yeah, that's a possibility. Let's see here. Okay. I think we've talked enough about Christian for tonight, but let's see. So when did Claire get infected? Okay, we talked about that, possibly at the barracks. Okay. Okay, Easter eggs. I guess we'll do the Easter egg. The only real Easter egg that I saw was, in fact, the one, again, that Jack Glatfelter posted earlier for us. The one with the ultrasound showing October 22nd, 2004. So that's interesting, and I'll put that up on the Lost blog once I post this episode, or if I post the show notes first, then I'll post the picture along with that. Okay, so now I'm going to get into some interesting things from the official Lost podcast from this past week. So if you don't listen to the official Lost podcast because of, you know, things that the executive producers say that could be considered spoilers, then this would be the time to tune out. But if you do listen to the official podcast, you know, none of this is really going to be new to you. But I wanted to recap this because there are some interesting things. Sometimes if you're just listening lightly to the official podcast, you tend to miss things. Or it's also difficult sometimes to kind of figure out which things they're just joking about and which things they're, you know, serious about. And so I try to weed out all the jokes and kind of focus on the things that they seem to be serious about. And I like to recap those things because a lot of times they turn out to be really interesting and, you know, sometimes important. Okay, so Damon Lindelof and Carlton Cuse won't reveal their intentions for the space between LA and X in the season 6 premiere episode title. Carlton said, it could mean LAX as though the X means it's been negated. I don't really know exactly what he meant by that. But he says, Carlton also says an explanation of the flash sideways. He says, we have two distinct timelines that we are showing you on the show. One timeline seems to be derived from a theory that when the bomb went off, exactly what Faraday was postulating occurred. There was a reset, and basically 815 flew over. So he does identify it as Oceanic Flight 815, even though apparently it's a month later, according to a screenshot. But
but airlines, they run the same flights every day. Like, the flight numbers are repeat.
Oh, really?
Yeah. That's why, like, when there's a big plane crash, they retire the flight number.
Right. Okay.
Yeah.
So he says there was a reset, and basically 815 flew over what was once the island, landed in L.A., and these people never experienced crash, never met each other by crashing on the plane, and there's a timeline going forward. The other timeline is obviously on the island. Juliet hit the bomb. It basically jumped them, you know, forward in time, but they're still stuck on the island, and they're dealing with the consequences of the fact that they're still marooned there. So that's what Carlton Cuse says about that, explaining the two timelines. Damon said, regarding the flash sideways, just one clarification. I kind of mentioned this before, but he says, I think a lot of people are referring to these things, the alternate timeline, as an alternate timeline, and we want to go out of our way to basically not use that word. we're not interested in alternate anything, alternate realities, alternate timelines, to basically imply that one of these timelines, either the island or off the island, is less than real is just borderline offensive to me, Carlson. These are both equally real and hopefully will reconcile in some way. Now, that's something that I guess you could consider potentially a spoiler, is that usually when they say hopefully or I would hope, or, you know, Carlton then responded, I hope they reconcile. I mean, I would be very disappointed to go through the end of the season, this season, and not understand what the interrelation between these two timelines is. And Damon says, I wouldn't blame you. So basically, in their code, the way that they talk on the podcast, that really means that eventually these two timelines somehow are going to, maybe not necessarily merge together, but they're going to tie into each other at some point. They're not just going to be two separate timelines that have, you know. Now, I don't know. I don't know if that necessarily says that there won't be two endings to Lost, but I was kind of wondering that after watching last, you know, the season premiere. So that'll be interesting to see whether they have two endings or whether somehow, as they sort of seem to imply, the timelines sort of converge at some point and there's really only one ending to the show. Damon says, would Desmond have been at the stadium if he wasn't training for a race around the world? Would he have been training for a race around the world if the island had never existed? What happened to Charles Widmore in 1907? And then he trails off. So all these great issues are being raised. But more importantly, how does it affect our characters? You think that not that many things have changed, but a lot more things have changed than you probably think. And that's going to be the exploration of the season. So basically, that's part of, you know, why we're getting these flash sideways. It's going to get a lot more interesting apparently than it has been so far. I mean, it's interesting, but you know, they say that a lot more things have changed than we realize, than we probably think, is how they put it. They said that What Kate Does, which is the title of the episode we just watched, ties in with the episode titled What Kate Did. Regarding Saeed, Carlton said, the question is, was he dead? And I think the second question is, what does it mean that he's up and walking around? What are the consequences of the fact that they threw him in the murky water? Clearly, it would have been better if that water was clear. I think the last part of that, what he said, clearly it would have been better if the water was clear. I think he's talking about, if the water was clear, it for sure would have healed him. And because the water was murky, they said it was risky. Of course, they also said that about Ben, too, before they even took him back to the temple. Or there would be consequences, at least, is what they said. But, Carlton says, clearly it would have been better if that water was clear. I take that to mean that if the water was clear, it would have, you know, fully healed Saeed. And because it was murky, that could have something to do with him not being fully healed and perhaps how he got the sickness. That's not entirely clear, but it's interesting, though, anyway. So, again, the questions that he asks, basically we should be asking are, was he really dead? Which, again, looking at the way Miles was talking to him, the conversation, how that conversation went, it doesn't seem like he was really dead because he didn't see the bright light and things like that Miles recognizes as normal things when you die. And the second question is, what does it mean that he's up and walking around? Apparently that means that he's infected based on what we saw in this episode, whatever that infection actually means or does. So Carlton Keyes said that Neil Frogert will get justice for having been killed by a flaming arrow in the original timeline. And he said, you'll see more of Frogert. If you like Frogert, Frogert's run is not done. So that's kind of cool that he's going to be coming back. I don't know. It's kind of interesting that he's such an insignificant character originally and,
maybe one of the characters like stops by his like Frogert shop.
Yeah, well, and on Lostcast they were joking about how, you know, maybe a flaming arrow hits him as he's like serving Frogert, you know, frozen yogurt. But anyway, Josh Spivy from Lost Flashback says, we better not get a Frogert centric episode. My theory is that we're not going to get
the season finale.
Yeah, maybe, yeah. or maybe they'll do, I'm not serious, but of course, but, you know, maybe they'll do another Lost Missing Pieces with Frogert having a flashback. let's see. The reason why this is guest 21 saying this. The reason why it's 10:22:04, time is moving faster in the alternate timeline. It will be the same date as original. Whoa, I don't get that at all.
Wait, time is moving.
Okay, sorry, I didn't get the whole quote because stupid talk show, how stuff talks show.
Yeah, I know. I don't have it either. You have to hit compressed or something. Yeah.
Okay, so he says the reason why it's 10:22:04, time is moving faster in alternate timeline, it will be the same date as original timeline by the finale. Oh, they're going to, like, reconcile both. Now, that
the narrative is compressed. Like you make it through the entire 5 years of Lost, like, in that timeline, you make it through it in a season.
Well, okay, maybe. But on the other hand, they just barely got off the plane, and the plane, you know, the original flight was exactly 1 month earlier. You know, like, I mean, Claire was not standing on the curbside waiting for a cab to come back for her, you know, for a month. So, I don't know. On the other hand, I guess we don't really know for sure that, no, I guess it's pretty much implied that it's all, this is all happening the same day. Like, when they get the ultrasound the same day, because that's what the detective
comes up. It's the same day, because she's still standing there after being kicked out of the cab.
Yeah. Oh, no, that part.
It's kind of funny.
I'm talking about in the hospital. You know, when they actually get the ultrasound in the hospital, that's got to be the same day, because that's when the detectives come up, and Claire says, no, my cab driver already left.
Right, yeah.
Anyways, that's interesting. I haven't heard that before. Liam Capranos in the chat says, Frank means clear and Lapidus means stone in Latin, meaning he's a possible candidate. I'm not so sure about the Lapidus meaning stone. I've never heard that before, or Frank for that matter. Not that I'm a Latin expert, but
I'm not sure that Frank... Does Frank mean anything in Latin? Come on.
I don't know.
Does not sound very Latin. Lapidus sounds Latin.
Yeah,
I'm going to have to look that up.
Yeah. Okay, I'm going to look it up. Here goes.
sorry that you're not immediately trusted, Liam.
Okay, Lapidus... Okay, this is from Lostpedia. Lapidus might be derived from the Latin word lapideus, meaning made of stone. From the Latin lapis, lapidus, meaning stone. So lapidus could I guess mean made of stone. As for the meaning of Frank,
Frank cannot be a Latin. Like, Frank is not a word in Latin. There's no way it is.
Okay,
Lego.
Well,
I'll put money on it.
Okay, here we go. So baby names world. parentsconnect.com, which is the first result that came up for Frank in a Google search result. It says that the origin, the Latin origin of Frank means free. He's a free stone, maybe. Okay, anyway, I'm going to stop talking about that now. Let's move on. Okay, one more joke before we finish with this part. Jason Hellman in the chat says, Frank is a hot dog. Dog spelled backwards is God. So I think he is an Egyptian god. All right, enough of that. So I guess we got through... Oh, no, there's a couple more things from the official podcast that I wanted to touch on. Damon indicated that the identities of Adam and Eve might possibly be addressed in the last couple episodes of the series. At first, when he was talking, I thought he was kind of joking about how they actually didn't work that in yet. But he said they have two episodes left to write, and so they would try to work that in, is how he put it. Which really surprised me, because I would have thought for sure that Adam and Eve would be, like, addressed, like, near the season finale. Or the series finale, is what I mean. So... In any case, the identities of Adam and Eve might possibly be addressed, but that's not a sure thing. Carlton said that Hurley never paid Walt for his $83,000 in backgammon winnings because, quote, I think the debt was forgiven in the spirit of having left the island. So, Okay. So now we're going to get into the preview for, well, potentially next week's episode. In the preview that they showed us last week, they showed us a scene that also showed up again in this preview and wasn't in the episode we just watched. So the preview is probably much more spoilery. I don't know if it's any more spoilery than the official podcast, but so here are some of the things that I noticed from the preview. Fake Locke says, "Hello, James," and Sawyer says, "I thought you were dead." Fake Locke says, "I am." So apparently, as a result of Sawyer leaving the temple and going out on his own, he's going to end up meeting the smoke monster, Man in Black, Fake Locke, whatever you want to call him. So that's interesting. I'm excited to see what happens with that and whether, you know, Fake Locke recruits him or what ends up happening. I could see that potentially happening, because here you've got Sawyer, who's disaffected. He doesn't like the others at all. He doesn't really seem to like anybody at this point. And so if Locke, you know, who he thinks is Locke, comes up with a plan to go attack, you know, the others or do something bad, then Sawyer might actually be into it, because, you know, Sawyer's kind of a bad guy in some ways, and, you know, he might want revenge. So, who knows? We'll see what happens there. But at least we'll see them get together and see how that conversation goes. And then, hopefully that's all in the next episode, because they showed like the big parts of that scene. There was also I don't know exactly chronologically in the preview where this was, but they showed Locke picking up a knife again, which was in the preview that they showed us last week. And, you know, obviously Fake Locke wasn't in this episode at all. That's either coming up next week or in an upcoming episode anyway. Richard says, he seems to be kind of panicky, and he says he wants everyone you care about, all of them. And I'm not exactly sure, you know, what he might mean by that, but a theory is, you know, presumably he's talking about the smoke monster, or the Man in Black. He wants everyone, but what for? I don't know. Maybe just he wants them on his side. I don't know. We'll see what Richard means about that. Someone asks, what is this place? And Fake Locke says at the end, I promise I'll tell you everything. I don't know if there's anything else that I missed, but let me see here if I can find that. I don't know if that's up on YouTube yet.
Yeah, I don't know either. I actually haven't watched it, but I'm not so paranoid about hearing stuff.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's about all I noticed. So that'll do it for this podcast. Surprisingly, we almost made it to 2 hours in spite of it being only a 1 hour episode. So there was more to discuss than I realized. But hopefully, after I cut out some of the dead spaces, which I do when I edit the episode, that's pretty much all I am doing to edit it this year, because I really don't have 2 hours to dedicate to go through and do much more editing than that. So hopefully it'll get cut down a little bit more, maybe an hour and 45 or something. But anyway, not that that's all that interesting to anyone who's listening live or listening to the MP3. So I don't know why I always say things like that. But in any case, so thank you for participating. Those of you who came to the chat tonight, Alex, it's always good to have you on the show. Thanks for calling in and sticking
around. It was fun. And we made it through a Kate episode without any Patsy Cline.
Oh, yeah. Not even on the radio in the taxi?
Yeah, it was nothing. I realized as we were talking, like, yeah, there was no Patsy Cline. But, yeah.
Interesting. Thanks also to everybody else who's in the chat. Again, you know, a lot of people had really good comments. So I appreciate all of you for joining us and sharing those things with us today. It's been a lot of fun. Glad you could make it and participate in the live podcast. I should have mentioned this up at the top of the show, but I still, you know, am requesting donations to help me pay for cable so that I can watch Lost live, so that I can do the live episodes. So if you're willing to donate, I'd appreciate it. So far, I've only gotten I think, one donation online. So, you know, it basically covers the installation fee. So, anyway, anything that you can contribute to that, I appreciate it. It's obviously, it's not mandatory, but I would appreciate it if anyone can help out. So, thank you very much. And again, I think I mentioned last week, I'm not looking to make a profit or anything like that. If I even pay off the the cable bills, I'll let everybody know, and I won't ask for donations after that. But all right, so thank you very much to everybody again, and we'll see you next week. And until then, stay lost and namaste.
If you have a product or service that you'd like to market to thousands of Lost fans, find out how you can become a sponsor of this podcast. Send an email to thelostmeister@gmail.com.
Thanks for listening. Please check out the Josh Meister's Lost blog for links related to this podcast. The address again is thelostmeister, that's thelostmeister.blogspot.com. Thank you, and namaste.